Good afternoon from high atop the mountains overlooking beautiful downtown Occidental, California. It's the HR Examiner Radio Show. I'm your host, John Sumser, and today we're lucky enough to have Mark Mafe along with us, and Mark is working hard on turning lots of globs of data into intelligent stuff for people in organizations. So, Mark, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, globs, that's a very technical term, so that's exactly what we're doing. So, just about myself, I live in Austin, Texas, and with my wife and two kids, and right now they're home probably driving my wife crazy because we have a rumor of an ice storm that closed everything down today, so that's a lot of fun for us. Yeah, like you said, John, Electronic Insight, or EI Talent, is the first product that we're developing and pushing out to the market. EI Talent basically takes any existing text, pulls it through our analysis engine, and interprets intent, motivation, possible behavior match, culture fit, core value match, things of that nature. But just backing up a little bit about my background, so I spent 23 years or so in printing and marketing communications from the time I was 15, working for my dad, cleaning the factory floor and printing industry, and then kind of raised up through the ranks to everything from sales to managing a company. In 2008, my wife's company came to us and offered us a chance to move to London, which we took advantage of and lived over there for 3 years. Spent the first year looking for a job. This was in 2008 when the world pretty much came to an end as far as printing, marketing, things of that nature. I think as soon as our wheels touched ground on Heathrow Airport, the whole world fell apart. So unfortunately, it was kind of bad timing. So I spent a year trying to find a job.
So it was you landing in London that caused that.
Yeah, exactly. That was the trigger of the whole economic collapse. It wasn't banking or anything. It was us actually touching down in London. So I spent a year working with recruiters, job boards, begging, trying to give my services away, whatever I could do to find a job, and came up with an idea to take online dating to job matching, basically. So I came up with an idea of measuring behaviors and matching them to company culture based on psychometric assessments. The company is called Hire Match Me. Still live in London. That lasted for about 3 years. Then my wife's company came to us in 2011 and said, time's up. Here's five cities we want to open an office in, and Austin was one of them. So jumped at the chance to move back to the U.S. in the great city of Austin, and worked as a consultant for a while with various startups around Austin and co-working spaces and things like that. And then met the guys from Electronic Insight and came on as a consultant, and now I'm the director of product, kind of the long version of it.
Oh, so how'd you make the hop from what sounds like basically a marketing career into something where you are trying to redefine how a technical product sits in the world? That's an interesting hop.
Yeah, it is. I guess I think an interest in turning things upside down and looking at different ways of doing things. And so when I came up with the idea of taking online dating to job matching, it was out of a need, frankly, desperate need of trying to find a job and try to think of different ways. A very naive point of view of I wanted to put all recruiters out of business, basically, was what I set out to do, just because of the experiences that I had. And it was always kind of a creative space. I mean, printing and marketing and things are always kind of creative, different ways of presenting things. So that was kind of my background, and I just took that knowledge and that interest into developing products that take very, very complicated ideas like EI is, and translating it into something that, one, people understand, excuse me, and two, they will pay us money for, basically. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in business to make money, and also to, you know, to try to help people find a better job and to help companies find better employees, obviously, but we don't go anywhere if we don't make revenue. So that's the end goal.
So dig a little bit deeper. Tell me what turns you on about the job. What's really exciting about that?
I'm sorry, John. I cut out for a second. I didn't hear the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question is, what's the exciting part of that? What really turns you on in the job?
The product part of it, really, working with the team here that we have and then just developing the ideas that we have and turning into a product and then taking it to customers. And we're very customer-driven product development, so working with the customers, and if they come up with ideas on how to improve the product or different ways of doing things, and then bringing that back to our team and building it, and then just the sense of satisfaction of building great products based on my background, based on our team's background, but most importantly based on what the companies actually need, and then being able to deliver it back to them in a pretty quick fashion is pretty exciting to me.
So give me a little bit more sense of the product. The idea, I take it, is you get this amalgamation of data about me that ranges from a LinkedIn profile to a resume to record of what I've been doing in various places online, and you can draw some conclusions about me. What kinds of conclusions do you draw, and how is that useful to a customer?
Okay. Well, I don't get much from your LinkedIn profile because there's not enough there, actually. So most people's their LinkedIn profiles, we have to. There's not much meat on the bone, as we like to say, John. There's just dates and states and titles on your LinkedIn profile. So we need about 200 to 250 good words, meaning, like I said, not dates and states. So, you know, what you did, how you did it, things like that, and then. We pull that through our engine, and we can pull out intent motivation, like I said before. So it's all about, you know, electronic insight is all about words show your behavior. So the way that you behave, whether you realize it or not, shows up in the way that you write, regardless of what you're writing about. So, excuse me, when you are looking for a job, you write a certain way, and resumes are largely regarded as a archaic document. But EI can actually pull out the words in between what you say when you're looking for a job, and that's what we pull out. So it's contextual. It looks at not just what you say, but how you say it. It's like English language words can have many different meanings. So the word run, if I say the word run, you could think I mean I'm going to go for a run. I could mean I'm going to run for president. I could mean I like that ski run. But unless you know the context around it, you don't know which version of the word run I'm talking about. So what EI does is it understands the context and understands exactly what you mean, and we use those language patterns to understand more about the candidate. On the company side, what we do is we take their culture or core values, we do kind of a deep dive into it, understand exactly what they mean by what they say again, take those words, map them to our core, and then deliver it. The results of each candidate back to them in their own words based on language patterns and context.
That's interesting. So let me and feel free to claim ambush here, but
okay.
But one of the things that
are you going off topic that, here, John? You gave
well, sort of, but not really. But you picked on me about my resume, so I'm going to tell you something that I know about
not personal.
Job titles.
Okay.
Just something in general about job titles, and that is
okay.
The longer the job title, the lower in the organization, right? So the director of jet propulsion projects related to amniotic fluid is almost always going to be a lower level person than the director of jet propulsion.
Okay.
And so It's my experience looking at resumes that the more senior and specialized a person is, the less their resume talks about what they do.
Sure.
So if you look at my particular resume, there are two or three items on there that take two or three words that tell you everything you need to know about where you might want to put me in a slot. And they're not exhaustive explanations. And if you don't understand what the words mean, I'm actually not very interested in talking to you, and you probably wouldn't be able to use me very well. So there's right. there's this thing about expertise in specific areas requiring less and less language to describe it because it's a rarefied atmosphere, and if you make a certain range of claims, I worked at place X under Y supervisor, that tells anybody who really is interested everything they need to know about you. It's only when you're down in the sort of the right. I've been working for 40 years, so of course I have that sort of stuff. When you get down to somebody who's got 8, 10, 12 years of experience, it may be really important that they explain why being the director of amniotic fluid programs at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory means something interesting, because it may not be obvious to everybody who picks up the resume, and they're interested in reaching a broader audience with it. So I wonder if the applicability of a tool like the one that you're describing has some sort of weighting towards people who are earlier in their careers.
As it stands right now, that's quite possible. We are... One of the challenges that we have is something that, like what you just discussed. So the more senior the person, the less likely they are to have anything on their LinkedIn profile or their resume, for that matter. So, you know, because they typically get jobs through network or past experience or referrals rather than actually putting anything on the LinkedIn profile that would intrigue somebody or draw them to you. So, senior people, developers, the same kind of thing. A lot of their resume is acronyms and things that people don't understand if they're not a developer. A third would be veterans, so people that come back from service. Their resume is largely something that civilians would never understand. A lot of acronyms,
right.
A lot of military talk. So we are working on ways at gathering other, other content. So I can go to your blog, one of your many blogs, I can pull it in and look at that way. So a question and answer. So we're talking to a company about doing a veteran initiative where we would send, four questions out. They would answer them in 250 words total, and then we would analyze them that way. So you're right. One of the challenges is, lack of information on profile, but we're working on ways to get around that. And if the person's really interested in the job or the company, then they'll take the extra step that's needed. Or we can find, develop software to go out and find those other places where they're hanging out. For developers, be GitHub, Stack Overflow, places where they would post content and just talk in their voice rather than just using acronyms for different development languages.
So one of the questions I end up with in this sort of project is one that's near and dear to my heart. I was a great engineering program manager for about 20 years, and when I would be inside of my environment at Westinghouse Defense, program manager, there were hundreds of us doing this job.
Sure.
One of our big clients was Boeing, and at Boeing, the program manager, there were three program managers in the company, and these guys walked on water, raised the dead, hired and fired, and if you needed anything done, you need to go to one of these three guys, and they were really the CEO of the divisions that they ran. And nobody else was allowed to be called a program manager. So when we'd go looking for program managers, we'd get these guys from Boeing in the resume pile because they had the right title, but they didn't belong there because the work that they did was so significantly different from what an operating program manager did that they weren't the same thing at all. And then the other extreme was at Campbell Soup, the program manager was the guy who counted the number of brooms in the broom closet to make sure that there were enough to go out and tackle the sweeping chores at the end of the shift. And
sure.
So you have these examples of things that are languaged the same and mean something entirely different based on the setting. Is that something
right.
that you guys are good at figuring out?
Yeah, I mean, not job titles per se, but you know, we don't look at skills and experience at all. We just look at the language patterns that are present. So the way that it works right now, companies open they sign on, obviously, and they use our dashboard. They create a job, and then they put in any candidates in that job, and then measure them, analyze them, and then look at them in comparison to other candidates. So, you know, we never say, you know, this is the person you need to hire. We say these people fit your core values, and this is how they fit. So you get a graph that shows each core value. You get a score that shows an overall fit. So, yeah, we do look at that, but the company has to know that they specifically fit for this job, or the sourcing person goes on LinkedIn and does a search for skills. It comes back with a list, and they analyze them that way. So to answer your question, we can't tell the difference between those specifically, but the company already has to know if they're a fit for skills and experience.
Got it. Okay, so then the next question is, I think you guys make the claim that you can tell actual likelihood that somebody's going to do well or not do well in an environment by looking at their resume. Can you give me some sense of how that works?
So it's all about potential. So with the way that the engine works, it looks at the context that they use, the words they choose, and the language patterns that are present from the company side, the core values and the culture statement or whatever we use that the company gives us to map what they're looking for, and that matches the potential up. So again, it's about the language patterns that are present on both sides that looks at the potential. To answer your question, I mean it's more than that, but on the surface, that's what it does.
Okay, yeah. So I'm very interested in understanding that a little bit deeper because I not everybody believes that culture is a meaningful thing inside of organizations. I happen to buy that idea, but I don't know that it's understood very well. And so the kind of thinking that you use to tell if I'm going to get along with the rest of the people on the team. It would be interesting if we could just peel that back one more layer.
Sure. So I think you're talking about team fit a little bit. I mean, we kind of get into that, but it's more about the overall fit of the core values than what, if I say culture, meaning that, it's more about the core values than the culture of the company. I know you spoke with Ravi, who's about team building and in measuring the team fit. We don't go that far yet. We will in the future with other features that we're working on. But right now, it's basically what we can do with companies is take their quote-unquote ideal employees, their resumes, put them in, establish that as a benchmark, and then see how candidates fit to that. So that's when we talk about potential, that's what we talk about. So how do they look? How does the shape of a candidate look? I know I'm getting a little geeky, but how does the shape of a candidate look compared to the shape of quote-unquote ideal employees that already worked there? So the employees they know that fit the culture of the company, the core values are there. How does each candidate stack up against them?
Okay. That's interesting. So do you imagine this spilling out into other HR sort of related things? Like, can you imagine... One of my theories is that current HR software is really broken because it doesn't really have room for people in it. It's all about jobs and whether or not there's a match between a person's list of skills and the job itself, and that leaves organizations without real access to the full range of data about people. So I'm wondering if you imagine this thing growing to become something more than a a fit assessment or a screening tool inside of a hiring process?
Sure. Yeah, it's we have several other features in development. In fact, I'm meeting with a customer next week to talk to them about the 360 review type thing. So feed text through that current employees are writing, whether you know, whatever they have, that company has access to, it's their emails, it's communications, it's, you know, it's a two-paragraph letter that they write or something. Feed that through and just understand more about, so how to, so look at the company core values, how do they look, how do they look by department, how do they look by position, doing a deep dive into that to see, okay, so the marketing department's really living up to, you know, adaptability. So what are they doing that the IT department's not? So learn and spend learning development dollars on the IT department to teach them what you learned from measuring, you know, the marketing department or succession planning, or, you know, there's many different things that we're working on beyond, like you said, the initial screening, sourcing for the recruitment part of it.
So do you imagine the spilling outside of HR?
Yeah, absolutely. We're working on financial markets. We're working on legal market, early discovery stuff, early case assessment. In fact, our CEO is just at Legal Tech in New York this week working on customers in the legal market, which we think is going to be a very big market. As you can imagine, if you can measure, take existing documents and measure intent, motivation, maybe even fraudulent behaviors you can monitor, because it's beyond semantic, it's beyond keywords. So the way that it's largely done now is through keywords. Well, no one's going to say that they're, you know, they want to commit fraud in their emails, but what EI can do is understand more about fraudulent behavior, potential fraudulent behavior, and monitor things that way.
That's interesting. So when I look at the broad space of HR, the space of recruiting in general, one of the things that I think is in shortest supply is ways for teaching recruiters and HR pros how to have better judgment about people. Right? That seems to me that's the fundamental skill that you need to have to be any good at any of those things, is to be able to look at people, understand them a little bit better, and make an assessment about whether or not they're going to do well in the environment you want to put them in, and develop over time to see if they're going to be something else. Do you have ways of thinking about making people better at their job using the tool that you sell?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just recruiters, it's hiring managers as well. With a small company, it's the CEO down, and we feel it's all about actionable data. So we hear all the time recruiters go, they present someone they think is a great fit. They go through the hiring process, or not the interviewing process, where they meet with a whole team, and then they hear back, well, they weren't a fit, and they say, well, why weren't they a fit? And they can't articulate why they're not a fit. So having data to go and say, okay, guys, I hear what you're saying, but they really are a fit, and here's why. So maybe you can get someone off the fence, or maybe you can have a really good discussion based on hard, you know, data rather than gut feel, or, you know, maybe that person had a bad day that morning and they just didn't like them because they were grumpy, or, I mean, we all know it's a reality that really happens. Or they didn't like their hair or something. But having the data to back up, you know, beyond a gut feel, we think is going to be essential, and that's what EI does through our graphs and different things that present that data to people.
Okay. So the degree to which data is burying us is the stuff of lots of conversations these days.
Big data.
The Eric Schmidt quote is that every 2 days we produce more data than we produced in all of history up to those 2 days.
Wow.
And it's an unimaginable burden of data that people are trying to find their way through. And you've picked this. You've picked this very special little arena to work in. Do you see applicability to solving bigger data problems? And I don't really mean big data per se, but we're going to need to find ways to wade through all this crap. And I wonder if you and the company imagine that part of your mission is helping people figure out how to wade through the crap.
Absolutely. It's presenting, it goes back to the product, right? So it's about presenting actionable data that people can make very quick decisions that are complicated, right? So hiring process is very complicated. We're going through hiring right now with our company. We're looking for a business development and developers. It's a very hard process. So it takes a lot of time. So being able to look at a candidate with data, and ours is a little bit different, right? We're not a corporate. Even though we sell to large corporations, we're not hard and cold look to it. So it's soft, it's inviting, and it's very easy to understand very quickly. So data is great, but unless someone can understand it very quickly, then they just get overwhelmed by it. So our mission is to present lots of data in a very quick fashion, and then down the line we'll give them the ability to, if they want to dig deeper and be more overwhelmed by data, whoever that person would be, we'll give them the ability to be able to do that as well. Some people want more data to make decisions, or we're just, at the end of the day, we're an assist to a recruiter. So it has to be simple and easy for them to find value from it. I mean, our mantra is add value, not steps. So anything we can do to prevent that through better represented data is what we're trying to do.
So who makes a great customer for you?
I'm sorry?
Who makes a great customer for you? What does a really great customer look like?
Obviously, anyone that is fanatical about their core values and their culture. It's been kind of strange, even though we're a small team and we have 12 or 13 people. The biggest companies have been our best target so far. We thought, with Austin and everyone likes our culture, we're weird, all that. But they don't have necessarily as big forcing function as the larger companies that have a huge funnel of candidates that they're trying to get through, taking hours and hours and hours to go through resumes. So that's basically our best customer are the people that love core values and have the biggest forcing function of having way too many resumes and not enough time to go through them. So we just kind of whittle them down into paying attention to the top ones first.
Cool. So any closing thoughts?
I appreciate the opportunity to come on. There's a lot going on in our space as a whole, as you know, John. I mean, it's just amazing. It's a white hot space in HR technology right now. And with what happened yesterday with LinkedIn buying Bright, I mean, it just lends more credence to what we're trying to do, which is find a better way to help companies find the right candidates quicker and more cost effectively. And people are like, well, that's a competition. But we love seeing competition in our market because it just lends validity to what we're doing. And no one, I think, knows that better than you, John, over the years of seeing the space grow.
That's exactly right. And thanks for the flattery. So just so everybody can find you, the company is electronicinsight.co or .com?
Well, the best URL is eitalent.com.
EITalent.com.
Yep, I know.
Everybody got that? And that's EITalent.com. and you can dig up Mark Mapes, and as you can tell, Mark will help you make it feel not so scary and that you can get a head start on the work that you need to get done to find people who are in alignment with your company values. So Mark, thanks a whole bunch for taking the time to join us. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. I'll see you at the next conference, I'm sure.
All righty. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
Hmm.